There's the excitement of bagging a rattlesnake single-handedly. There's the excitement of grabbing an alligator by the tail and pulling it out of a pond. So there's sort of some excitement and danger that's thrilling, along with just loving the animals.
Many children go through a phase where they are curious about snakes and reptiles. Most eventually outgrow it. Some, like Kate Jackson, never do, and they grow up to become herpetologists. I'm Samantha Brown. You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. We bring you pieces each week about the intersection of people and place. Up now, Snake Charmer by Kate Jackson and produced by Kent Hoffman for the CBC's Out Front.
This is my story about life as a herpetologist. And most people don't know what that is. My mother even has said that she never knew what a herpetologist was until she gave birth to one. Herpetology, by the way, is the study of amphibians and reptiles. I think most kids are naturally interested in amphibians and reptiles, and most of them outgrow that phase. And the few of us that don't, well, we're the people who end up becoming herpetologists. I started with frogs. I was given, when I was about 1 year old, a beanbag frog for a toy. And I had a mother who, in the 1970s, wanted to protect me and my sister from gender stereotyping. So to do this, she prohibited us from having dolls. So instead of dolls, what we ended up with was a whole lot of stuffed animals. And in my case, it was a whole lot of beanbag frogs. And we played with these beanbag frogs in a really anthropomorphic way, you know, just as though they were dolls, dressing them up in clothes and subjecting them to tea parties. But to me, there was always a lot more to it, because, you see, I knew that I was myself a frog. And I was not just any frog. I was the queen of the frogs. And that entailed duties. And my grandmother, I think, still keeps a letter written by me on construction paper in sort of shaky crayon block capitals. And it says, "Dear frogs, soon it will be time to start hibernating. Love, Kate." And so in this way, I ruled the frogs of the world and I prevented a global ecological disaster from happening. Well, the first encounter I had with a live snake is a bit embarrassing to tell. I was playing with my sister on what we consider a beach in southern Ontario, and there was an old washed-up rubber tire and a bunch of other garbage, and I was splashing in the tire, and my sister had a colander. So she was scooping water out of Lake Ontario and trying to dump it into the tire, and she was doing it so fast that without realizing it, she scooped up a baby snake. And she dumped this baby snake onto my legs. And I was really startled. I'd never seen a live snake before. And I screamed and jumped out of the tire and ran to our babysitter, who scolded me. She said, "What do you mean by making such a ridiculous fuss? A big girl like you." So I guess that was my first experience with a live snake, was just sort of startled and interested. And I think that interest led to sort of obsession and fascination and fondness for them. It was that fondness for snakes that led me in high school, in music class, to write a piece for brass quintet about the northern water snake, my first snake and my favorite. and I called the piece Neurodiocypodon. And in that piece, I tried to sort of capture some of the movement of the snake and the way it spends its time, but a lot of that sort of serpentine movement.
So the piece is a bit sinuous in places, and then it's active and quick in places where I imagine the snake underwater snapping for a fish. And I tried to capture something of that snake and the way it moved.
Now, about 15 years later, I'm a professional herpetologist. I do work in the field and in the lab. My specialty for the past 10 years or so has been mostly venomous snakes and, to a lesser extent, crocodiles. And today I've invited my sister to come along to visit me in my lab because I'm keeping juvenile crocodiles there for an experiment, and she hasn't been to see them yet, and I thought she'd get a real thrill out of it. The room that I keep my crocodiles in is the reptile room, so there are lizards and snakes in there as well as my crocodiles, and crickets to feed to the lizards.
There's one in there.
Yeah, two.
They're huge.
Well, they're yearlings, and this one is very greedy. See how fat his tail is?
Yeah.
And these are the ones I've been using in my experiment.
How effective is the tape that you have their jaws taped with?
Well,
No, Kate, I'm not touching it. No.
I brought my camera, especially.
No
so
way.
You hear that?
Yeah.
You hear how they growl?
No, don't bring it near me. I'm serious. It's thrashing around.
Well, these jaws are taped. Can you hear
it growling? I can hear it growling.
My specialty is in venomous snakes and in crocodiles. And there's a swashbuckling element to it. There's the excitement of bagging a rattlesnake single-handedly. There's the excitement of grabbing an alligator by the tail and pulling it out of a pond. So there's sort of some excitement and danger that's thrilling, along with just loving the animals.
Oh, I like that. It closed its eyes.
Yeah. Well, you see the blood on my lab coat there?
I didn't know it was
blood. That's from when I was taping the jaws to persuade somebody to hold him, and he just nipped me. And then I put my hand in my pocket so that they wouldn't be discouraged from holding him.
Oh.
What I'm good at that other people can't do is just without fear bag a venomous snake or grab hold of an alligator. I do those things sort of instinctively.
But pay them.
Yes, I know.
Shy.
I think of the lab as just somewhere where I get stuck to finish off answering some question.
What I really love about my job, of course, is the field work, and I've been lucky enough to get to go to some really interesting places.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Going to Arizona was a huge eye-opener to me because when I first saw the terrain, it could have been the surface of the moon for all it resembled anywhere I'd ever worked before. It was desert with saguaro cacti, you know, the cactus that looks exactly the way a cactus is supposed to look, and then all these other plants. Horrible plants. Every single one had a stinger or a spike on it. But when we found a rattlesnake under a bush, there was a certain reverence among all of us herpetologists. If we had to pick it up with the tongs, we sort of felt badly having to pick it up and move it, interfere with its natural life. I think it has to do with the privilege of being having a little insight into their life. And you don't want to go in there and screw it up for them.
Let's hear that signal again.
This is my second trip to Arizona. We're going to be radio tracking snakes, and that just means that there's a radio transmitter inside the snake, and we have an antenna, and it makes a beeping sound that leads us to the snake so we can find it, find out what it's doing, how it spends its time.
Yes, I think we need to go that way.
We've got kind of a sad task this afternoon. There's this one snake I really care about, one of the rattlesnakes. She's called Katie.
She's named after me. When I was here last summer, she was just getting ready to have her babies, and she had them. But then she went into a hole, and she's been in that hole since October. They know she's down there because of the signal from the radio. So either she's trapped in there, or she's dead, or she's just staying in the hole. But it seems likeliest that, 90% likely she's dead. And so we're going to dig out the hole this afternoon and find out. So either she's going to be dead, or she's going to be trapped in there, in which case she'll be really pleased to be let out. Or maybe she's fine and she'll just be pissed off at us for disturbing her. That's what I really hope.
Is that the hole? So she's right where she was before, as we thought she would be. She's underground. She went in through a hole, but the whole area got stamped all over by cattle who grazed in the area. And so it's possible that they crushed her way out. And that's why she's still in there. But anyway, we're going to start digging now.
Boy, this is hard work. The ground's rock solid and full of boulders and really dry. Oh, do I see the beginnings of an opening there?
Leave it as is now.
Okay.
There's an opening out.
It's okay. Well, I almost stuck my hand right in the hole.
Yeah.
She rattled, and I was just about to stick my fingers in, and there's this little tongue sticking. So, she's alive, and she's not pleased to see us. Are we going to take her out to see if she's fed?
No, we're going to leave her right where she is.
Okay, good. Are we going to...
She will probably move. And I'm going to just go ahead and try to shine in there. I don't know where my big mirror is.
I want to get a picture.
Finding Katie alive was just such a wonderful relief. We were so happy because I'd been so sure that she was going to be dead, and there she was, alive and in good shape, rattling angrily, just being herself. It was wonderful. And I think I've never been happier to see a rattlesnake than I was at that moment. That really was a moment of joy. I was fond of her. She was special to me. She had been named after me. She was like my special snake. And sure, you know, I love that snake. Scenes like that are rare and sort of perks of the job, I guess. My interest in these animals started as a fondness and became a scientific interest. And for many other herpetologists, it worked the other way around. For me, herpetology is about love for the animals. Sure, she's a meter-long western diamondback rattlesnake, but why can't you love a venomous snake?
That piece comes from Kate Jackson and Kent Hoffman for the CBC's Out Front. To hear more pieces like this one, visit the Public Radio Exchange at prx.org. The Nature Conservancy provides support for this podcast online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.